use Canva to create a little video this morning. So we're just going to kind of set the stage for what we're going to be talking about this morning with Elohim, God as the creator. And we're just going to take a look at his the wonders of his creation just for a moment, right quick. God is amazing. Truly, the psalmist said it correctly, did he not, in Psalm chapter 19, verse 1, that the heavens declare the glory of God. I mean, the cosmos, the universe, outer space, you know, when we see things that were created, in these nebulas and all, whatever all these things are called, and to think about the one that created all of these things, it strikes awe and reverence, I believe, into the very depths of our hearts and souls. And it really struck a friend of mine years ago. It's been quite a long time ago. His name is Rod, lives back in Birmingham, my hometown. And when Rod was in college, he went down to the Gulf Coast for spring break. And he partied like it was 1999. Now, for those of you over 35, you get the reference. Well, Rod had partied a little bit too much. Didn't know what he was doing. Didn't even remember where he was at that point in time. And somehow, I don't know exactly how it happened, but it did happen. Rod got sandwiched in between a truck and a dumpster, and he broke his leg. And a couple of days later, he sobered up pretty good. And so he said, I just went out to the beach, and I got close to where the water was coming up to the sandy shore there. And he said, I started thinking about how big the ocean is. And I started thinking about how small I am. And then it made me, he said, and then it made me think about who God is. You know, is there a God that really created all this stuff? Is there a God that created me? And if he did create me, what purpose is there for my life? What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to be about? Who am I supposed to be? And so Rod eventually put on Jesus Christ, and he hasn't looked back. And that's been at least over a couple of decades ago. So this morning, we're going to look at the questions that Rod was asking himself. Is there a God that really created all of this that we see, this amazing cosmos, this amazing universe and earth? And then what does that mean for our life if he did all of these things? So now we are going to see a lot of information today. So in a sense, it's going to be like drinking from a fire hydrant. So I apologize if you need me to stop to take notes or anything, or if you have any questions, we can get to those. So, but first we're going to look at God as creator. So we're going to look at pretty much the universe itself. And so to start off this way, we're going to look at what philosophers and theologians call the cosmological argument. And so basically it says this: everything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe, the cosmos, the earth itself had a beginning. Therefore, it had a cause. And so this seems like pretty basic common sense. I mean, we see this thing happen all the time in our everyday experience. People come into existence, animals come into existence, things come into in and out of existence all the time. And, you know, it really made me stop and think. So this is 11 years ago. So that's my firstborn, Jacob. And I saw him come into the world. And it's a beautiful thing. I don't ever want to see it again. But it is a miracle that life, you know, has come forth from where before there, you know, his name's Jacob. There was no Jacob. And now there is a Jacob. And so Jacob began to exist. So, and again, all of us began to exist at some point as well, as we were knitted together by God in our mother's womb. So it stands to reason that if people, plants, animals, things had a cause, then wouldn't it stand to reason that the universe itself had a cause? Our parents had a cause, their parents, you know, and so on and so on and so on. The universe itself did have a cause. So why would it then be that only the universe, as some people argue, would pop into existence out of nothing? These are actually things that universities and college professors, it's not all of them, of course, but some of them do teach that it came out of nothing. And this is really controversial, and here's the reason why. He just passed away a few years ago. Stephen Hawking, he was a brilliant physicist. As far as human intellect goes within the realm of physics, he was very smart. And he had this to say. He said, as long as the universe had a beginning, we can suppose that it had a creator. Stephen Hawking, he was an atheist. And I believe, unless he had a thief on the cross type of moment, he died still proclaiming that God did not exist. And so, in looking at this idea that the universe had a beginning, we're going to look at four lines of evidence. Number one, the universe expanding. The second law of thermodynamics, what is known as a radiation echo, and then what has also been labeled as the great galaxy seeds. So first of all, the universe is expanding. So galaxies were discovered through telescope back in 1929 by Edwin Hubble. He started looking at his telescope And he noticed that these galaxies that he could see, like however far in the distance, it looked as though they were moving apart. And so with that, he theorized that, well, if they're moving apart, then maybe there was a point in time where they were closer together. And then if they were closer together, then it seems like maybe there was a beginning point to all of this, to the universe itself. The second law of thermodynamics. Our universe, as we speak, is running out of usable energy. So what that means is the sun, our star, that gives life to the Earth, it's running out of energy. Now, scientists say that's not going to happen in our lifetime, but they do say it's going to run out. It's not always going to be there. Therefore, the sun is not eternal. Robert Jastrow, who was the founder of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies at NASA, by the way, not a Bible-believing Christian, he had this to say in his book, God and the Astronomers. He said, minute by minute and year by year, as hydrogen is used up in the stars, the supply of this element grows smaller. If it is running down, there must have been a time when it was fully wound up. In other words, the car had a full tank of gas at some point. If it's going to run out, at some point, it had to be full. Yep. Radiation echo. So these two scientists here, they claim to have found this radiation in space that had to result from some type of explosion. And so their findings led them to believe that there really was a beginning to this world. There really was a beginning to the universe. And interesting, for their discovery back in 1965, which has been a long time ago, but nevertheless, they won the Nobel Peace Prize for their discovery. Then we have something called the Great Galaxy Seeds. I don't really understand this. I'm not smart enough to, but it doesn't matter. But what scientists tell us is these galaxy seeds are what helps hold matter together. And so it's really interesting. So these scientists here, again, they're not believers. And so when they discovered this, these great galaxy seeds, now I think he overstated his case. He said, you know, George Smoot from Cal Berkeley University said, what we have found is evidence for the birth of the universe. It's like looking at God. Again, he overstated his case, but you get the point. Again, Stephen Hawking said, this is the discovery of the century, if not of all time. Pretty big words for someone to say that in his respected field. And then another astrophysicist, Michael Turner, said, they have found the holy grail of cosmology. This led another agnostic, who is not a Christian, not a believer in God, he said, this enigma, this mystery of the cosmos is probably the one area where the atheist will feel uncomfortable because it really does lead to the universe having a beginning. So then the question comes up then. So what caused the universe? Well, it would be reasonable to assume that whatever caused this universe and caused the earth, caused human beings to be created, would have to be outside of the universe, would have to be beyond space and time. So that pretty much limits us to two types of causes. First is the inanimate, the natural cause. Something caused it. Or there is something that's intelligent and intentional, which means that someone caused it. So we're just going to just briefly look at these. We're not going to go into to details about these because it's just a headache waiting to happen. But nevertheless, there's this idea that there's a multiverse, or our universe is just one of many, 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 many universes out there. There's this, what some have touted as this eternal energy source out there that somehow gave rise to life and everything in the universe. And then there's this quantum state, this empty vacuum, which physicists say, they'll call it nothing, but a vacuum is not nothing, it's actually something. So, but we'll just go through these right quick, because all three of these have these in common. Well, first of all, the multiverse, the energy, this energy and this vacuum, it still begs the question, you know, where did these things come from? You know, if the parts are not eternal, we're not eternal, the sun's running out of usable energy, it's not eternal, then how can the source be eternal? So essentially it's nature creating nature. So out of nothing, literally nothing, nature created itself, and then nature created us. What about an intentional, intelligent cause? Is a personal God who is eternal, he's timeless, he's spaceless, all-powerful, all-knowing, he's spirit. And that's what our Bibles tell us, isn't it? John 4:24, God is spirit. Spirit is not part of nature. The spirit's not, it doesn't have, spirit doesn't have weight or mass or height or distance. It's not material. It's not physical, like everything that we see in the universe. So, it's reasonable to say that God created the universe. But then the question always comes up, and you'll see this on YouTube shorts or TikTok videos, but what caused God? Now, on the surface, it seems reasonable or rational to ask such a question. Well, if everything needs a cause, well, then what caused God? But that goes against the premise, because the first premise is whatever begins to exist has a cause. God did not begin to exist. Therefore, God did not have a cause. And people could say, well, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. But actually it does, because this is the definition of who God is. This is the definition of the inherent necessary properties that really make up who God is. And this has been going on for millennia, for thousands of years. Even Aristotle himself, who was a Greek pagan philosopher, he said, there must be a first uncaused cause. In other words, there must be something eternal out there. And he believed it was God, just not so much the God of the Bible. So this is the definition of who God is. If you want to say that God had a cause, well, now we're talking about something different. We're not talking about God. It's completely different at that point. So this is like asking, how tall is the number 7? So the number 7, it's an absurd question. Number 7 doesn't have height, it doesn't have weight, it doesn't have mass, it doesn't take up space, it doesn't have length. It's a ridiculous question. Graham Oppy, he's an Australian philosopher. And, you know, being a geek and a nerd like I am, I tend to follow these types of things. And what Christian philosophers and theologians say about Graham Oppy, he's probably the most sophisticated atheist or agnostic philosopher out there that doesn't, you know, use TikTok slogans like, well, what calls God? Graham Oppy, he said that it is wrong to think that the question, who made God, raises a serious problem for theism, because he understands the definition. Graham Oppy gets it, at least as far as this is concerned. Now, where he is now on that journey, I don't know, but this has been a few years ago. So we can see that the universe, everything had a beginning, but also we can see design in the universe. So if there's design, then there obviously has to be a purpose. As G.K. Chesterton wrote about 100 years ago, he said, so one elephant having a trunk was odd, but all elephants having trunks looked like a plot. Chesterton was he was something else. His writings, he's quite funny in his little slogans and cliches and things, but we don't have time to get into that. But this is Chesterton was a believer, but this is not just the Christians. It's not just the believers that are saying that there it looks like the world, the universe, has been designed. This is the ancient Greek philosopher Plato, and he had this to say. He said, "From the order of the motion of the stars and all of the things under the dominion of the mind, which ordered the universe." Here's Aristotle again in his work Metaphysics. He said that there has to be a first uncaused cause, something, there has to be something eternal, which he says is God, a living, intelligent, immaterial, eternal, and most good being who is the source of order, design in the cosmos. It's really fascinating that that these concepts really do go back that far. And then Paul Davies again, who is a modern day physicist, he said that, "I wrote that the universe looks as if it is unfolding according to some plan or blueprint. The rules look as if they are the product of intelligent design. I do not see how they can be denied." Richard Dawkins, who was more popular back in the early 2000s, not so much anymore. I mean, he still has a lot of books; people still read them. But his popularity and the things that he is that he proposed in fighting primarily against Christianity for so many years has kind of died down. And we're going to come back to him later on in this, which is actually pretty remarkable. We'll see. But nevertheless, Dawkins had to say, "Yet the living results of natural selection overwhelmingly impress us with the appearance of design as if by a master watchmaker, impress us with the illusion of design and planning." So they can't get away from that word design. It's still in his head. He doesn't believe in God, but nevertheless, he says, "Man, it really looks like there's some design here. I don't believe it, but it does look that way." And there's a reason it looks that way. As Paul said in Romans chapter 1, verse 20, "Ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, has been clearly perceived in the things that have been clearly perceived in the things that have been made." God designed it. But there is some pushback. "Well, there's no design. Everything just evolved this way." So let's look at some evidence for design. So there's a difference between this geological formation and this one. One is natural and inanimate. The other is obviously intelligent and intentional. The same thing with sand dunes. This is natural and inanimate. This is intelligent and intentional. Two types of causes. So what about us as human beings? This next thing just really, I don't even know how to wrap my head around this. It's so mind-boggling. If we take a look at the human brain, what they tell us is our brains have 1 trillion cells. They say that's enough information to compose 20 million volumes of books. Our brains contain as much information as the Library of Congress, and if stretched out, it would span 650 miles. That's just in here. You want to see something else that's pretty cool? Consider the DNA of one cell. One cell. 5 million pages of information. That's the equivalent of 25,200 page books. I don't even know how to fathom that, y'all. That's inside of every single one of us. All of this information. So we're going to consider the universe next. As talked about earlier, Edwin Hubble, he believed that he had discovered that the galaxies were moving apart. So space, therefore, continues to expand. if the expansion rate was too large, there would be no star formation. If there's no stars, there's no sun. If there's no sun, there's no life here on Earth. Scientists say if the expansion rate was too slow, that the universe would collapse prior to star formation and produce only black holes. I don't know what that would look like, but you get the point. The size of Jupiter, believe it or not, scientists believe that if Jupiter's size were greater, Earth's orbit would become unstable. And if Jupiter's size were smaller, too many asteroids or maybe comet collisions would occur on the Earth. And here's something I came across just a few days ago, that they're saying that these little dark spots right here are caused by meteors and comet fragments that crash into Jupiter. And some of these little spots here are actually bigger than the Earth. But so Jupiter acts kind of like this cosmic vacuum cleaner. And it literally is sucking in things that fly by in our solar system. Otherwise, if they hit the Earth, I mean, they've made movies about this stuff. We're goners. Scientists tell us that 40-plus tons, I was kind of shocked to hear this, to read about this, 40-plus tons of asteroid and comet material rain down on the Earth every single day. We just don't see it because of our atmosphere. But they tell us that if too few collisions took place, then the Earth would be depleted of materials that are essential for life. Obviously, if there are too many, again, the movies come true and life would not exist. The moon, due to its gravitational pull, seawaters are cleansed and nutrients are replenished. Also, the moon, however this works, stabilizes the tilt of the Earth's rotation on its axis. And speaking of the Earth's rotation and tilt, if it was greater or smaller, the temperatures differences would be too great. If the rotation was slower, also temperature differences would be too great. If the rotation was faster, there'd be a whole lot of wind. We wouldn't be able to walk. It would just be too great. Life would not be possible. Another physicist by the name of Michio Kaku, he goes on all excellent. He's not a believer. He's not a Christian. I don't even think he's a theist. But here's what he had to say. He said, it's shocking to find how many of the familiar constants of the universe lie within a very narrow band that makes life possible. If a single one of these accidents were altered, stars would never form, the universe would fly apart, DNA would not exist, life as we know it would be impossible, Earth would flip over or freeze, and so on. Everything's balanced just right, literally on the edge of a razor blade. In one little move this way or that way, it's over. We don't exist. And here's something that's really neat. Back in 1979, they sent this spacecraft, Voyager 1, and they wanted to take pictures of the solar system, so they'd fly this thing, you know, by as many planets as they could and take pictures of it. But right when, I think it was past Neptune, I think it was around 1990, NASA or whoever was controlling it somehow told the Voyager 1 to turn around as it's traveling through space and turn around and take a picture. And so it took a picture of the Earth. And you can see the Earth right here is in this ray of light. And it's really fascinating. Carl Sagan, he was an astronomer. Unfortunately, he's passed away. But he commented and said that Earth seems to be setting in a beam of light as if there were some special significance to this small world. And this is the sad part, he says. But it's just an accident of geometry and optics. Our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Isn't that interesting? Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. It's an interesting way to put it. Here's where Carl Sagan was right on some things. We're very small. I mean, we're very small. My brother Rod, he got it right when, and that was just looking at the ocean. Man, I'm small compared to the ocean. He was right. That's Earth. I mean, it's not even a speck of dust when we consider the grand universe that God created. It is very vast. Earth really is a pale dot in this cosmic ocean. But notice what else Sagan has done. He left the realm of just description to interpretation because he's a human being. So he goes from what the universe and what the earth looks like to actually what it means. And this is the most important question of all. Does it matter? Exactly. I think he does, or he did. He died in the 90s, I believe. And if you were to watch him on, I went and watched some of his videos on YouTube that have been uploaded. And, of course, just based on what you see on the video, anybody can put on a face in front of the camera. But he seemed like a genuine person, but just unbelievably and seriously misguided. But nevertheless, it does beg the question, does it matter that God is the creator? I'm not going to run to the Christians and the believers. I'm going to go to another atheist duo, Albert Camus, and if I'm pronouncing it correctly, sounds French, Jean-Paul Sartre. They said it does matter because they said that life would be absurd. Why? So back in 2012, I was on a plane to go visit the Scottish wife before we got married. And I was sitting on a plane next to this guy right here. His name's Martin, from Copenhagen, Denmark. And we just began having a little, you know, a conversation. And he was reading a book by a Russian author named Dostoevsky, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And I said, I've never read anything by him, but I know who he is. And so I quoted this to him from Dostoevsky. I said, oh yeah, he's the guy that said, you know, if there is no God, everything's permitted. And Martin said, oh really? And I said, yeah, it was in his book, The Brothers Karamazov, I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he said, oh, that's neat, but I don't believe in God. And I said, well, Martin, you know, we'd been talking for a few minutes. So I felt comfortable asking the question. I said, well, Martin, if, you know, if there's no God, then it's pretty much a free-for-all. I said, so what are you hoping to accomplish in your life? And he said, well, you know, he was in doing a foreign exchange program at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Pretty intelligent guy, I could tell. And he said, well, he said, I hope one day to get a good job, and I want to get married, and I want to have kids, and provide for a family one day. I said, great. And what do you want for them, your kids? And he said, well, I want the same thing. And I said, well, I think that's really good, and it's good to provide for your kids and try to give them the best life possible. And I said, so based on what you've told me, you know, you just want the same story to continue. And he said, that's right. And I said, well, Martin, let me ask you another question. I said, so what scientists tell us is that one day the sun will run out of energy, and they're theorizing that before that, it's actually going to expand. So as the sun gets bigger and bigger and bigger, they believe that the Earth will one day be swallowed up. And so if that's the case, everything that you've worked for, everything that you built your life on has literally come to nothing. There's going to be no children, no grandchildren, no great-grandchildren to say, hey, Granddaddy Martin set us up a good life. No remembering the past, no accomplishments. There's going to be nothing. I said, so what's the point of it? And he said, you know, that really does bother me. And I said, well, I think that's good, because there's a God that loves you, and he's saying to you, the things that you do in this life do matter. And somehow in God's providential, eternal wisdom, that he uses those things to grow us and to impact others. And those things go on forever in eternity. They don't have to end in the grave. They don't have to end in a state of nothingness. And he said, well, yeah, I don't know. So I became Facebook friends with him, and he shared some sarcastic things about God and Christianity, and I tried to respond as graciously as I could, and even send him birthday messages, private messages, but then he deleted me off Facebook, and so that was the end of Martin. I never knew what happened to him, but hopefully he has found the Lord. But it does stand to reason, doesn't it, that if God is not the creator, if things that we do on earth are virtually meaningless, like there's really no point to it, we may have moments of temporary happiness, but then those are fleeting, and there's no sustaining value. I mean, people can discover cures for cancers. Mackey, Alabama can win the most championships in the history. Of course, they're already there, but they could continue to do so. And it wouldn't matter. I pretend I didn't hear that. I remember hearing, for those of you that follow college football, I remember hearing Philip Fulmer, that was a coach at Tennessee. And this is after they had won the 1998 national championship. And they're getting off the plane, Knoxville, Tennessee, and all these fans come around. They're cheering, you know, Tennessee's the national champions. We're the national champions. You know, this is great. Everybody's screaming, you know, band music's playing, you know, whatever, clapping, cheering. And this one little kid goes up to Coach Fulmer, and he says, hey, can we do it again next year? And it struck Philip Fulmer. He's like, well, can't we enjoy this one for now? But it's human nature, isn't it? Even as little children, it's never enough. I mean, that was a great season they had, but now that's been 28 years ago. I mean, nobody but Tennessee fans really think about it. Well, maybe nerds, college football nerds like myself think about it, but it doesn't impact their lives. They have moments of happiness, but there's no lasting value. It doesn't matter. Again, no ultimate value. You could live like Joseph Stalin or Robert Cox. You could execute millions of people or change countless lives. But it's not going to matter, because your behavior, how you live your life, is unrelated to your destiny. Everybody ends up as dust and worm food. It's not going to matter what any of us did. The heavens declare the glory of God, Psalm 19:1. And this is just a quick recap. The heavens had a beginning. The heavens and the earth were designed. The heavens and the earth have a purpose. It's not an accident. It was not a mistake. it wasn't something that just evolved and just sprung up out of nothing. In declaring the glory of God, it also declares a story about the glory of God. And this is where it comes to us too. In Psalm chapter 8, verses 3 through 4, the psalmist talks about the marvelous creation of God's hands and his fingers. But then the psalmist asks, what is a human being that you should be mindful of us? What are human beings? Like the universe, like my baby Jacob, we've all had a beginning. All of us were designed. We have a purpose. You were not an accident. Maybe your parents didn't plan you, but you're not an accident. You're not a mistake. God has a plan and a purpose for all of our lives, all of us. John Lennox, one of my favorite speakers on these types of topics, someone asked him the question, well, why did God create us? He didn't need us. And he said, because God wanted us. And when I heard him say that, of course, you know, the concept, I've always kind of known that, but God wants you. And everybody of sane or sober mind is not a sociopath of some type. Everyone has this longing to be wanted by someone or a group of people, a place to belong, a place to where we feel valued, a place where we feel there's some kind of importance in our lives. All of us have that longing to a certain degree. And yet, here's this God that created all of this that we've seen. You know, this vast universe, I mean, these galaxies and these stars and this, you know, these nebulas, these amazing, you know, colorful things that we can't even fathom. I mean, this God that, you know, I think that, you know, if you were to get in a spaceship and travel the speed of light just to get to the other side of the universe or the solar system or the galaxy, rather, the Milky Way galaxy that we live in, it would take you like something like 100,000 years. And the God that created, that's just one galaxy. And they say that the galaxies are the equivalent of the sand on the seashores, all the seashores on the earth. You can't count them. And the God that made that wants you. He wants you and me. There's no way you're an accident. There's no way that we're a mistake. God's word tells us that I knew you before I formed you in your mother's womb. Like, I knew you. Like, wow. I was like, okay, God, like, I didn't even exist. Yes, but you know me. And in Isaiah, it says, you know, these innumerable stars, God calls each of them by name. Like, there's not a star that doesn't have a name. And yet he knows every single one of us by name. And I'm like, whoa. It's unbelievable. And so, as a result of not being an accident, as a result of not being a mistake, as a result of being designed with purpose and value and meaning, our lives declare a story about the glory of God. But not just by having a brain with trillions of cells and DNA, which is cool and all, but it can declare that, obviously, but we declare a story that is far greater than just biology. And I was thinking about this, going back to Richard Dawkins for a second. Christians declaring a story about who God is. has eternal eternal significance, obviously, but intertwined with it has temporal significance as well. Dawkins spent so much of his professional life as a biologist to try to tear down Christianity. Now, without coming out and saying it specifically, he's now actually very grateful for Christianity, because he sees what's happening in his native country with the rise of secularism and also with the rise of Islam that's coming into his country. And so now Dawkins came out about a year ago on being interviewed by one of the national television stations over there, and he came out and called himself, he said, "Oh, I consider myself a cultural Christian." Joe Rogan, big podcaster. Yeah, I've heard of him before. He said that he grew up going to Catholic school, and he said that the nuns that he had, as somebody said, one in particular, he said, I considered her the spawn of Satan himself. And I was like, whoa, is this what Christianity's like? Is this what God is like? He said, well, that, I don't want any part of it. And so he spent most of his life, even in his professional life as a podcaster. I'm not going to repeat what he said because the language is too vulgar, but I mean, it was just like this anger and venom just coming out of him. But then he started surrounding himself with people that were declaring a story about the glory of God. And Joe, and I have no idea where he's going, but he's now admitting on his podcast that he's attending a church somewhere and that he loves going. And that also, thinking about this, also triggered another memory. I became acquainted with about 7-8 years ago with a former Marine drill sergeant. I mean, you know, pretty tough guy. I mean, I was sitting there talking to him, you know, as close as Gabriel and I are, and I was actually a little nervous because he talked with this really rough voice, and that brother looked, I mean, he looked tough and mean. I was like, man, I'm on your good side. He shared with me an experience that he had that completely changed his life. And he said that his wife had been baptized and became a believer. And so he said, as soon as she became a believer, he said, I made up my mission. He said, my mission in life was to deconvert my wife from Christianity, because all Christianity is, it's a crutch. It's for weak people that can't stand on their own two feet. So he said, no pun intended, but I was a militant atheist at that point. And so he spent weeks, maybe even months, of reading things, of looking up websites, looking up people like Richard Dawkins and some of these other people. He said, I'm going to destroy the faith of my wife no matter what it takes. He said, and then one night he had a dream. And he said, Brian, he said, I'm telling you, he said, that dream that I had, he said, it was just as real, maybe even more real, than you and I standing here talking. And he said, I had a dream, and in this dream I was asleep, but I woke up in outer darkness. And he said, I was in some kind of room, and he said, but I couldn't see anything. He said, everything was pitch black. And so you know how when you're in a room with nothing in it, your voice will carry and you can hear it on the other side of the room? He said, that didn't happen. He said, my voice stayed right here in front of my face. He said, and I was walking on something, but it was uneven. He said, I didn't even know what I was walking on. And he said, you know, I'm supposed to be one of the tough guys. You know, I trained Marines for combat. I was a drill sergeant, and I did this, you know, for a couple of decades or so. You know, I'm supposed to be prepared for this stuff. I was, because I'm tough. I'm hardcore. You know, nothing fazing me. He said, the scariest moment of my life. There's no training from the Marine Corps, no preparation, nothing I could read, nothing I could do. Nothing could have prepared me for being in that situation is the most horrifying experience of my life, and it was only a dream. And he said, I don't know how long this went on for, but 30 seconds is enough. You know, seconds enough of that experience. He said, so I had this dream, and there's this light that's coming out in the distance. And it's just a little faint light. And I'm like, I'm going towards that. So I'm walking towards it, and as I'm walking, the light gets bigger and bigger. And then all of a sudden, I find myself in this field with these green rolling hills. And on top of one of the hills directly in front of me was a man in a robe. And he said, I couldn't make out he was far away. I couldn't make out the distinct facial features and the specifics of his face. But he looked at me, and he said, follow me. And then he turned around and started walking to the other side of the hill. And I was like, this is weird. Like, what's going on here? And he said, but again, it's better in the darkness. So I start walking up the hill, and when I get halfway up the hill, there's just all this commotion in the background. And so I turn around to see what all the noise is, and it was every single person that had told me about Jesus, that had shared Jesus with me. Every one of those people are pointing up, and they're yelling to the top of their lungs, follow him. He said, I woke up from the dream, and I got up, and I went into the kitchen floor, and I sat down. And so this tough Marine drill sergeant sits on my kitchen floor, and I'm weeping, and I'm weeping, and I'm weeping. And my wife finally wakes up and hears me, runs in, and said, Guy, what's wrong? What's wrong? And he said, I got to become a Christian. Those people, they declared the story of God with their lives, and this is not exhaustive, with their thinking, with their attitudes, their behavior, their love, their words, as they walked in the truth, as they evangelized and made disciples, and so on. So that is God as the creator. He has created us. He has designed us for a specific purpose. And may God help us as we seek to live out that purpose so that we can become more like him and bring a few people along with us in the meantime.